Business Rockstar.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Business Rockstars. We connect a worldwide community of entrepreneurs on radio, TV, and online. I'm Pat O'Brien. Our guest today is Brian Garrett. We're talking about early stage technology. He is co-founder and managing director of Crosscut, one of the big ones. Is there such a thing as early stage in technology anymore?
Absolutely. I think
venture capital.
Sure. I think the nomenclature shifting all the time and the risk orientation of these different types of venture vehicles is shifting both to earlier risk and later risk as the markets ebb and flow.
Right.
But at the end of the day, arguably our sweet spot is sitting right after what's traditionally considered angel funding or friends and family money. And we try to be the first institutional money behind scalable ideas and scalable entrepreneurs. And so there's risk. There's plenty of risk there.
And who takes that risk?
Well, mostly the entrepreneurs, to be honest. We're just a capital partner, and we view ourselves as sort of roll up your sleeves, ex-operators that will help. But at the end of the day, the success or failure of any startup is really on the back of the entrepreneur themselves.
Right. Or the product. I mean, you know, is there such a thing as getting in too late? That's why I said when you say early stage, is there such a thing as early stage anymore, or is everybody too late to cash in?
I think there's plenty of room for innovation. I think there are shifting dynamics in industries that create opportunity to build scalable businesses. It's not so much always a product innovation in terms of a physical product that you consume. The best example is just the proliferation of mobile handsets, smartphones, and the numerous businesses, the most obvious, of course, being Uber, that have popped up from that type of penetration. Handsets for mobile gaming, you name it, it's had a massive impact on everything, just the smartphone. And so every single business has been taking advantage of some disruption or some evolution of a previous category of technology.
Brian Garrett is our guest. How did you know you could do this when you started doing it?
I didn't, and I still don't. You know, I'm 15 years into it now, and it's one of those industries where you invest all your time and energy in trying to help entrepreneurs succeed.
Was that your mission?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what makes this job fun. That's why all of my partners at Crosscut do it. We love working with smart entrepreneurs that are thinking about how the world's going to change and trying to come up with solutions and business models that can scale and build build value and obviously pay out in the form of an IPO or a big merger and acquisition.
How do you sit there and look at something or an idea and define success in this business anymore?
Well, success arguably
You missed out on the iPhone.
Yeah, no doubt. I'd say success from a venture capitalist point of view is really in the numbers, right? So we take our current fund is a $75 million fund, and we are one of the few where you are measured by how many dollars you return back to our limited partners. That is unfortunately a very slow path to success because it takes 5 to 10 years for these companies to develop into mature businesses. So, you know, we look for feedback all the time. You want signs that you're doing the right thing, and you get it with next round valuations, step ups in valuation from other investors. But at the end of the day, you can sit around for a very long time and not have any idea if you're any good at this business.
What makes Crosscut unique?
Yeah, I think the most unique aspect of the fund was that we arguably saw the rise in the Southern California tech ecosystem before any of the other funds that have risen here. So it was 2008. My partner Rick and I were sitting at another fund that wasn't focused on Southern California as an emerging market. Our third co-founder, Brett, was the co-founder of Intermix Media, which owned MySpace. And we saw his sale to News Corp for $700 million and a bunch of other exits in the 2005-2006 timeframe as the signal to us that more repeat entrepreneurs were going to be starting great ideas. And
Brian,
so we went after it.
Right. Brian Garrett's our guest. You're watching Business Rockstars. We connect a worldwide community of entrepreneurs on radio, television, and of course online. I'm Pat O'Brien. Whatever happened to MySpace?
MySpace ended up...
That's one example that I'm not trying to rip them, your friends, but it's one example of something that started, looked great, and then...
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Great question. Arguably, you could say that in the hands of a large strategic acquirer like News Corp, the entrepreneurial mindset and the innovation was lost. Arguably, you could say Facebook and Zuckerberg just built a better product that actually resonated with their end user in a far more substantial way and has had greater longevity. There were business model risks around that. There are all sorts of risks that sit upon those types of businesses, which is arguably our toughest job, is trying to know when to invest, when to get out, to drive liquidity for our investors, and how to stay on top and time things in the appropriate way.
How many employees do you have?
We have seven total people in the partnership, four partners, and two associates and one chief of staff.
And when you hire them, you're looking for?
Mostly compatibility and personality. So we're a pretty relaxed office. We sit right in the heart of Venice. It's an open office space. And every day we sit around and brainstorm on business models, ideas that we get excited about. So the ability to communicate effectively, say what you really think, build an honest and open work environment has been our top priority. Obviously, having a background in tech and understanding our business and the types of companies we fund are critical.
Brian Garrett's our guest. How do you fire people?
No fun, is it? No, it's not. We've been fortunate to be pretty lucky in backing entrepreneurs that we have continued to back. You hear about horror stories of entrepreneurs that take the venture money and then get gutted and replaced.
Right.
I think we've only had one CEO replaced in 60-something deals, which is a good sign that we're backing the right people.
And how many things come your way that have already been looked at? Another way to put it is copyright situation has got to be insane, right?
Yeah, well, we say ideas are actually a commodity. It's the execution of the ideas that makes the difference between success and failure. And so for us, we see a lot of very similar business plans and business models. And where we have to make the tough decisions is figuring out which entrepreneur we think is more backable, has a better idea or better relationships that can help scale the business.
And when does a business start making money? At what point? are there different levels of ideas, personnel?
Yeah, I think we've seen businesses that have raised $400, $500 million of capital and still are not profitable, but are slugging their way to a place where they can find that scale. And then we love to find businesses that can get to profitability on $3, $10, $15 million at a time. Those tend to be the ones where the outcomes are better financially for both the entrepreneurs and the venture investors, because you're not taking a lot of dilution.
So for the entrepreneurs out there, at what point in their business do they need a VC?
Usually,
like immediately.
But. Yeah, no, I actually, the first conversation I have with entrepreneurs is make sure your business actually needs venture dollars, because it's not the cheapest form of capital, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can do it off of revenue, if you can do it off of a debt line through a bank, you're going to retain more of the business. And if you can still get to those milestones of success, you're going to end up owning more of the business. Venture money is really for ideas that need to hit this inflection point of scale, and they need that capital to get there because they need to staff up on a sales force or hire 10 engineers to build out and build defensible IP. We look for those types of businesses where they can't get to the next milestone without our capital and our relationships.
And what are the pros of a VC? I mean, how do you measure success there?
Yeah, so I think when an entrepreneur is evaluating which VC partners they want to work with, they should really be oriented towards, we joke, but it's true, you know, most venture relationships last longer than the average marriage. So this is not a decision to be taken lightly.
What's the average marriage?
Probably less than 5 years, and divorce rates are very high, obviously. So with our orientation, you know, you need to sit down with that VC and say, hey, are we aligned in the things I'm going to do over the next 12, 18, 24 months?
I keep asking the Kardashians, what do you guys exactly do?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the beauty of that.
Famous for being famous.
Right, and they're actually nice people.
Yeah.
What were your biggest failures?
We've passed on a bunch of deals along the way. Every venture has their sorrowed tales. Back when I was young, it was a company called Inktomi that ended up going public and being worth several billion dollars. And I told them, their investors, their management team, I was 21 years old at the time, that there's no market for their technology and they should just call it a day. That didn't go so well. And then along the way, we've seen deals like Jamdat, when Rick and I were at our old fund and we couldn't get a partnership to invest in mobile consumer games. Now within Crosscut, We missed Oculus. We didn't really have a partner that could pursue gaming. Now we do with Clinton Foy, and he's done a great job for us. So constantly seeing how the LA landscape is changing and then adding to our team to basically make sure that we have domain expertise across the areas that matter. We're going to miss deals. Every fund does.
And quickly, how do you, like when EA started, how did you know it would be this big? Not EA, but just gaming.
We didn't. So, I mean, you talk about a miss. We passed on Riot Games, which is now a multi-billion dollar and leading the entire esports category. We were too small a fund to write that check at the time. But did I have any idea that you know, this sort of MOBA style of game would be as popular as it is and lead to a multi-billion dollar business? We didn't. Now what we do is we stay on top of that. We stay close with the founders, and we understand how things are evolving.
Learned your lesson.
Yeah, and now we're very active in esports and the entire ecosystem of professional gaming.
Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'll be calling you. I've got a couple ideas.
All right.
If you're watching Business Rockstars, we connect the worldwide community of entrepreneurs on radio, TV, and online. I'm Pat O'Brien. Thanks for watching. See you next time.
If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business.
Meet Evan Goldberg, founder of NetSuite.
I had to learn that the hard way with my first company. That's why I started NetSuite. I needed to see everything that was going on with my business in one place, so we built the world's first cloud business system. And after 20 years, over 16,000 companies run their businesses on NetSuite. Everything you need to keep growing is in one place. Financials, HR, commerce, customer info, and more. NetSuite gives you the visibility and control you need to make smart decisions and grow with confidence. That's why companies who use NetSuite grow 3 times faster than the S&P 500.
Find out the rest of Evan's story and get your free guide titled 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits at netsuite.com/bigger. That's netsuite.com/bigger for your free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Profits. Go right now to netsuite.com/bigger.
You should.
This is Business Rockstar.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect entrepreneurs all over the world. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Thanks for joining us. Our guest today is Ian Siegel, the co-founder, CEO of ZipRecruiter.com. Hey, Ian, how are you?
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you here. Now, ZipRecruiter has basically replaced the old Shoppers News or where you look for jobs. You have a wealth of jobs on this website.
That's correct. We have more than 900,000 businesses that
that's
use
a wealth.
That use our service as a one-stop shop for all their job posting needs. And what makes us different from those traditional job boards is on ZipRecruiter, you can post a job one time and it goes to 100 different job sites all at once with that one submission. And then all the candidates from all those different boards come into one easy to review list.
We're gonna get into the mechanics of it in a minute, but how did you come up with this idea? Because you worked for stamps.com
and rent.com,
anything with one word, right?
That's right. I was lucky that I started my career at the boom of the internet.
Right.
And so I've serially worked at internet startups. And one of the things that's true about startups is they're often too small to have their own HR department. So as a manager, I was repeatedly required to do my own recruiting. And recruiting for these startups meant posting a job first on Monster, then on Career Builder, then on Dice, then on Hot Jobs. And every time I had to hire someone, it was such an onerous process. And I thought, surely there is a better way. So eventually, after 18 years of doing this, I decided to build the better way, and immediately there was a tremendous response.
Came right away?
Right away. We made money the first day we launched, and I had quit my full-time job and become full-time at ZipRecruiter within just a couple of months of launch.
Now, what were the mechanics of starting it? Tell us about how that, as an entrepreneur.
I came out of an industry where what we did was build early stage companies into bigger companies. Mm-hmm. So I had probably better preparation than most young entrepreneurs do for building my own company. That said, we wanted to make sure we had a viable product. So we didn't take any money when we started. We bootstrapped it, and it took off like a shot And so for the first 4.5 years, we didn't take money from any VCs, and we got to tens of millions of dollars in revenue and many millions of dollars in profit before we ultimately decided that to grow the company to its maximum potential, it just made sense to take money.
Now, that meant Ian Siegel is our guest. He's CEO of ZipRecruiter.com, or ZipRecruiter. How did you know? I once asked a cliff diver, you know, they dive off the cliff into the shallow water. I once said, the first time you did that, how did you know you could do that? Because it's life or death. How did you know you could pull this off?
It's such a funny question that you ask me, because I will tell you that every member of my family and my extended family, many of the people I had worked with at internet startups, all asked me that as I was starting the business. In fact, I think that one of the number one challenges most entrepreneurs face is it's such a non-traditional road to take to go start a business. No one's quite sure how to do it, and everyone presumes you're going to fail, and they try to talk you out of it. So you have all the challenges of trying to get a business off the ground, and at the same time, you are surrounded by doubt. So the answer to your question is, I didn't know I could do it, but I wanted to do it.
Remember in high school when they used to say, you're going to need this someday in life? Did you apply anything you learned in high school and your degrees to help you set this up?
In college,
So you have sociology, psychology, and English, right?
That's correct. And I had a variant of sociology and psychology called social psychology, which was my primary focus, which is the study of small group dynamics. Mm-hmm. And when you start a startup, the interesting thing is you start with a small group. And I feel like I had no idea at the time when I was studying about these dynamics how much of a role it would play in my long-term career, not just at ZipRecruiter, but really every job that I've had. So, yeah.
How did other businesses find out about this? I mean, it must have been, were they happy you started ZipRecruiter?
You know, we launched our product, and it was a job distribution solution, and the response was immediate. And the way we measured that response was initially we just bought ads online on sites like Google and Bing. And everywhere we bought, we were making money within 30 days on the investment we were making in marketing, which was a really good sign. And then virally, the word about our product started to spread. And to this day, we get about 30% of our business from just word of mouth, just viral spread. So we started with traditional marketing, and then it just took off from there.
I'm going to talk about it in a minute. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect entrepreneurs all over the world, including Ian Siegel. He's a co-founder and CEO of ZipRecruiter. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstars. Welcome. Putting all the people together, and you made money right away, right?
We made money right away. That's how we were able to bootstrap.
And what was your pitch?
Post to multiple job boards with one submission.
That's a great pitch.
All the candidates come into one easy review list.
You could not have done that. Obviously, without the internet, this would be impossible, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we looked at it.
Yeah, a hell of a large yellow pages.
That's right. I mean, there were so many, like many businesses, we had really good timing with our solution because there's 40,000 job boards. And most companies that have to go recruit somebody feel overwhelmed. There's the obvious choices like a Monster or Career Builder, but those sites charge anywhere from $375 to $450 an ad. And that's outside the budget of most small and medium-sized businesses in the United States. So we were a welcome upgrade to Craigslist, who many of these companies were using for their recruiting, because Craigslist was just emailing them candidates one at a time, and we created a system for managing and vetting.
How is it possible to connect all these people? Or to figure out how to connect all these people? Was it possible?
I mean, obviously it's possible. I have a really simple philosophy about building products, particularly internet products, which is my fundamental belief is every business only sells one thing. And the real key to making a successful business is identifying your one thing. And for us, it was the simplicity of posting to multiple job boards at once. So once we figured that out, we doubled and tripled down on that, and we made it our mission to figure out the answer to that question you just asked, which was, how do you connect all these job boards? So we had to do a lot of business development, a lot of custom technology integrations. I think we actually paved the way and made possible for others to follow along behind us and offer similar solutions.
Ian Siegel is our guest from ZipRecruiter.com. What were the hurdles that you had to overcome early?
You know, one of my favorites.
Why'd you laugh?
I'm laughing because there were so many hurdles. I mean, I will tell you a story.
Are they high hurdles, low hurdles?
I'll tell you a personal hurdle, and then I'll tell you a business hurdle, which is I had grown to a level of success and stature within my career working for others, where I was the guy that you hired to turn around your struggling operation. And so I was getting paid a lot of money to come into businesses and basically fix them. Mm-hmm. And when I started ZipRecruiter, my salary went from many hundreds of thousands of dollars per year to $36,000 a year. And I remember sitting at my kitchen table at 11 o'clock in the morning telling my wife, you know, I know we don't make as much money as we used to. I'm just so happy. I just feel like this is what I was meant to do. And I really believe we're gonna be able to build this up. And we may never make as much money as we used to make, but I think this is gonna be a better quality of life. And my wife looked me dead in the eye and she said, how long? And I said, what? And she said, how long before we call this a failure? I said, give me 2 years. Give me 2 years.
Well, that's everybody's goal is happiness, right?
That's right. Well, I was content. So there were some personal challenges. And then from a business perspective, you know, my favorite saying about internet companies, and particularly startups, is first they ignore you, then they mock you, then they try to kill you, then they try to buy you.
Right, or copy you.
Yeah.
And we're happy to inspire, inform, and connect entrepreneurs from all over the world. This is Business Rockstars. We'll be back in a minute.
If you travel for business or pleasure, Hotels.com and the Hotels.com app is all you need to get great deals on all kinds of properties all over the world, and with an amazing rewards program that gives you free nights to stay at a property of your choice. Now, speaking of Hotels.com, we have an amazing Tech It Out contest for you. If you feel like you're in need of a getaway but are a little tight on cash, listen up. Each week, Hotels.com and Tech It Out are giving away a $250 Hotels.com gift card to put towards your travels. All you have to do is as follows. Go to Twitter and follow at hotels.com. Tweet out why you deserve a trip, just a sentence is fine, and include the hashtag TechItOut. That's it. Once again, to be eligible for the $250 Hotels.com gift card, one given away every week in August and September, follow Hotels.com on Twitter, tweet why you need a break, and include the hashtag TechItOut. One randomly drawn entry will be chosen each week. Good luck.
This is Business Rockstar.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect entrepreneurs all over the world. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Thanks for joining us. Ian Siegel is one of those entrepreneurs. Do you feel like an entrepreneur, or is this something that just fell into your lap? Because you worked at other .coms before.
I definitively feel like an entrepreneur.
Right,
and
good.
You have to go through the challenges of the first couple of years of building a business, I think, to really earn that title, because so many things can end your business, and we faced a lot of them and survived.
What were the worst?
You know, everybody wants to do business with you in the early days, and then as you grow, you become more threatening.
Yeah.
And so the partners that were helping you build your business suddenly become your competitors, and that can be a really difficult transition to manage. At least it was for us.
Was it difficult to connect the job seekers to the job holders to the, you know, all that, to connect them all?
We started helping employers find great candidates, and then by dint of the fact that we had, you know, a million plus new jobs going online every month through our platform, we started to attract an enormous number of job seekers. We now get more than 13 million job seekers using our site every month to find a job. And so for them, we tried to build a solution that was as easy and time efficient as what we'd built for the employers. There, for job seekers, we actually aggregate the jobs that we find on 500 different websites into one big group. And then our team of data scientists picks just the right jobs for you every day, so you don't have to search anymore.
Ian's the CEO of ZipRecruiter.com. If you listen to the politics in this country, there are no jobs.
Yeah.
You know, we've lost all our jobs to Mexico. You know, you hear this every day.
Yep.
But that's not true, right? You just have to...
You know, the BLS, which is the agency that puts out the report about how many jobs were created or how many jobs were lost every
Bureau
month.
Bureau of Labor Statistics, right?
Yeah. They use a methodology that was created over a decade ago, and it really doesn't capture the way that work happens, and I'll give you specific examples. So Uber drivers. There are hundreds of thousands of Uber drivers, but that's not counted as work. Those people are considered unemployed. when Verizon had a strike last month and 30,000 employees stopped working, the BLS counted that as 30,000 people losing their job. So I think that the politics around the representation of how many jobs are open at any given time aren't actually reflective of the market. What we see is that the number of jobs that are open right now is at record levels. It is the best time to be looking for work in this country than it's been in the last
Why
decade.
Why is that?
I think that you have a tightening labor market where there are a lot of employees who are happy with the job they have. So employers are struggling to find either employees to take new jobs or to replace existing personnel. And so in conditions like this, what happens is the leverage swings to job seekers. This is a great time to go get a raise from your boss or to go change jobs and earn more money.
Are job seekers and job providers looking for specific certain skills, or how's that working?
The truth about the job market, whether it's a good job market or a bad job market, is 75% of the open jobs at any given time are what we call entry through lower middle level skilled positions. Mm-hmm. So those are jobs you can do with a GED. Those are jobs where with no training,
and you hopefully can move up.
You can start at the bottom and work your way up. That's all the driver jobs, whether it be truck drivers or Uber drivers or Lyft drivers. That's all the retail jobs. That's all the waitressing and waitering jobs. That's all the call center jobs. There is a lot of opportunity for people to work in this country right now. And there is a tremendous number of unfilled positions.
What kinds of jobs, we're talking to Ian Siegel, who runs ZipRecruiter. What kind of jobs, what's the most popular job? Mine?
Interestingly,
yours?
The most popular job in this country
is the most popular job people are searching for.
Well, is actually a job that no, so the most posted job that is unfilled has zero job seekers searching for it. We have this really interesting mismatch in the marketplace right now. Yeah, so most people don't know that over-the-road truck drivers, which are those big 18-wheeler rigs that you see, power all the commerce in this country. When you buy goods from a restaurant or a store, they were carried there by one of those big rigs. That's why every time you get on an interstate, all you see is trucks. There's over 2 million truckers in the United States, and right now there's between 2 and 400,000 unfilled trucking jobs. And then you add that to all these new gig economy services like Uber and Lyft and Seamless and Delivery Hero, and basically everyone's looking for the same thing, which is a driver. And do you know how many job seekers are looking for a driver job? Zero.
Really?
Yeah. No one thinks to put driver in.
Is it because maybe for truckers, the unions or...
I just
they
think
don't know it, how to drive a big truck, or
driver is not a position that people traditionally think about as a career.
And those guys make money.
Truck drivers make a lot of money, and they get really great benefits. It's a hard job. You got to move across the country, and you got to be where you say you're going to be exactly on time. So
you got to get the product there.
That's right.
I've known some of those guys. It's an awful job.
Yeah.
What's the easiest job to find, though? Well, I guess drivers, right?
Drivers the easiest job to find. There is a boom happening in inside sales. So if you're someone who likes to talk to people, you like to get on the phone, there is a voracious appetite for someone with your skill set in this current economy.
Right. Not insider trading.
No, this is people who get on the phones and from a call center will call you up and say, hey, I think you should try this service, or hey, I think you should donate to this political candidate.
You know, the website you ought to get is how to get those people off your phone.
Yeah,
because
I agree with
basically
you.
They're reading out of a book, right?
And depends.
I'm not blaming you for this, by the
yeah,
way. But I mean, those jobs are everywhere, and they just you can tell there's no passion. That's my next question. How do you find people to work for you that have a similar passion? I know you have a lot of passion.
Finding great talent is a real challenge, but the challenge is on the employers. It's not on the job seekers, and a lot of employers recruit badly. And the number one way they make a mistake is that when they post a job ad, they list all the things they want from the candidate, but they never actually sell the position. They don't talk about what the company culture is like. They don't talk about what the office environment is like. They don't talk about the local amenities around the office where that person will work. And if you think about how you would talk to somebody who was sitting in the chair across from you, if you tried to convince them to come work for you, would you start the conversation by saying, I need you to have this skill, that no. skill, and that skill. You would never recruit somebody no. that way. So people need to learn to have a more organic approach when they are recruiting talent, and then they will find that the best talent responds to it.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect entrepreneurs all over the world. You're watching Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Ian Siegel is our guest at a good one, the CEO of ZipRecruiter. Where is this business going to be 5 years from now? Because 5 years ago, when did you start it?
We started basically 6 years ago.
Okay, sounds right. About 5 years ago, it was yeah. like starting, and you're 6 years in. Where do you want to be 5 years from now? Take me with you.
When we started, we bootstrapped, and we were making a lot of money. Right. And we had this choice we had to make about whether we were going to put money in our pockets as the four founders or whether we were going to reinvest it in the business. And so then the question became, what is the right amount of money for us to keep? And so I had all of the partners sit around the table, and what we did is we ran around and we talked about not how much money we wanted, but the lifestyle we wanted to lead. And I have children. So my list was, I want to eat dinner with my family every night, I want to go to the gym 3 times a week, and ideally I'd like to fly business class. If I have enough money to do that, I'm happy. And so that became the definition of success. Now, we've gone from 4 guys sitting around a kitchen table to north of 400 employees.
Who all want to fly business.
We are doing well beyond $100 million a year in revenue. We're growing between 40 and 50% a year. And I think at this point, my ambition is to actually make hiring someone or finding a job something that people think about with a positive feeling. I don't think anybody looks forward to hiring right now. I don't think anybody feels like doing a job search is either going to be easy or fun. And I think that our mission is now to make that an enjoyable process for both sides.
Well, I can see right now, I've seen your website, I can tell that it makes it easier.
That's right.
Because you have so many choices on there. What's the culture like in your office?
We have a lot of young, passionate, intelligent, ambitious, up-and-coming stars in our organization, and a lot of what I think about my role is helping shepherd their careers so that they can go on to become the entrepreneurs and business leaders that will be talking to you on this show 2 years from now, 5 years from now, and 10 years from now. So we have a great culture.
Is it like Silicon Valley? We got these 6 guys sitting around.
You know, that show hits really close to home, and I always laugh that people outside our industry enjoy that show so much.
It's so specific.
Really specific, and I love that show, but I'm glad you guys enjoy that show as well.
No, I love it. I love it. How do you balance your life? You said earlier you got kids and the gym, and what do you do? How do you balance it?
I get upset with myself when I either become frustrated or feel self-pity, because I feel like I won the lottery. I hit the jackpot. I am the guy who started a business. It worked right out of the gate. Every day I go to work with a fantastic group of people and we have a lot of fun. And what more could you ask for?
Nothing.
For me, that is winning all by itself. The fact that the business is on a tear is all gravy.
What's the easiest part about being an entrepreneur in a company like that? Or does the easy part make you lazy?
The easiest part? Nobody's ever asked me that. That's a good question. What's the easiest part? I think the nature of being an entrepreneur is a willingness to challenge everything. So you're always trying to, in effect, disrupt yourself. And it's a really healthy philosophy, a willingness to listen to your customers and potentially kill whatever it was you did that got you to this point,
right,
to replace it with something you think is better. And for me, big strategic risks are easy now. Like, that's the requirement. That's Netflix moving from sending you DVDs to streaming everything online. It takes those kind of bold moves to continue to be successful.
For people just starting out as an entrepreneur, give us a couple tips.
Well, what I say to young entrepreneurs, and I get approached a lot, is every business only sells one thing. The key is identifying what the one thing is your customers expect from you and then being the best at it. Once you know that one thing, you want to focus on making it perfect. And then the next thing you're going to do is not launch another thing. The next thing you're going to do is obsessively focus on how you're going to tell as many people as possible about your one thing. Where I think a lot of entrepreneurs get tripped up is they figure out what it is that their business does, and then their solution for continuing to grow is to build new things instead of focusing on
exactly.
some of the things that are outside their probably comfort zone, which is sales and marketing and PR and the like.
That's great advice. Ian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
That's why we're here, to inspire, inform, and connect entrepreneurs all over the world. I'm Pat O'Brien. This is Business Rockstars. We'll see you next time.
Have you heard what President Trump said recently?
Newsmax, you like Newsmax. I like it too. I like it too.
Now you can watch Newsmax TV and get the truth about Trump from Bill O'Reilly, Mike Reagan, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, and more. Newsmax TV is America's fastest growing cable news channel, now in 70 million homes. Find Newsmax on DirecTV, Dish, Xfinity, Spectrum, Optimum, Fios, UVerse, and more systems. See Newsmax TV today. It's real news for real people.
Hey, people at my friend's company got blackmail emails.
Yeah, it's a popular type of spear phishing attack.
Wow, that sounds serious.
It is. Scammers claim to have compromising information, like a video, and threaten to share it with their contact list, unless the victim pays a ransom.
What if they target someone at our company?
We're secured. Barracuda Sentinel uses artificial intelligence to block spear phishing attacks, including blackmail emails.
Well, that's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Kriebel.
New York is considering legislation requiring manufacturers to make detergent pods look less appetizing. It is an overreaction to the Tide Pod Challenge, in which teenagers film themselves pretending to eat the colorful pods. About 80 teenagers reportedly tried it, which is dangerous. But so are hundreds of other household products that are not intended to be eaten, yet nobody is proposing to ban shampoo, paint, or oven cleaner. Such problems require the diligent attention of parents, not politicians. Government can ban products, but it cannot mandate common sense. Legislators cannot be everyone's parents. This just isn't that complicated.
For more, check out our podcast at lensofliberty.org.
This is Business Rockstars.
Hi, I'm Mark Lack, CEO of Shorten the Gap, inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. Joining me is Stephanie McLean, the CEO and founder of Trendy Treat. And a topic that I want you and I to kind of dissect here is how an aspiring entrepreneur who's maybe stuck in their 9-to-5 and really, really, really wants to go out and start their own business, but they're struggling to cut the cord on their only source of income that allows them to live and pay their bills. What's that process look like to transitioning from the 9-to-5 that pays your bills to ultimately making the shift into your own business? Because it can be gruesome and challenging, but it can also be one of the most rewarding things somebody does. So what are some practical tips for somebody to cut the cord from their only source of income to going out and starting their own business?
I think setting up a schedule, when I was in high school, we used to call it a rhythm table, and probably allocating, because you have more time than you realize, maybe allocating 2 hours a day to your business. So say sometime when you'd be coming home and probably watching TV, say you're probably gonna spend 2 hours of that time focused on starting your business. Now with so many digital communities that are available, I think it's easier than before. You can actually break down what you need to get this business going. And if you're earning an income and you don't have the time, you can actually hire people. So you can hire people on Upwork, Elance, all these other companies.
When you say hire people, though, people might think, I don't have the money to, I barely pay my bills or save up money. But I think you and I both know
right.
that it's actually pretty cost efficient and effective.
Right.
So what are some of the price points? Give us the range.
You can hire people for really cheap. Like you can get somebody for like $2 an hour in some
parts. $2 an hour, right?
Yeah, there are people for as little as $2 an hour in some parts of the world. Another thing I would say is definitely like break the business down, figure out what you can outsource. Outsource those parts, create a budget, and you know, make the plan to pay people from that. Get a virtual assistant, because if you don't have a lot of time, a virtual assistant can do a lot of the things that you need to get done.
How much does a virtual assistant cost for people listening?
You can get somebody for under $100 a week.
Wow.
For a few hours. Because, I mean, if this isn't a business that you're devoting your full time to, you can get somebody for under $100 a week. And, I mean, you can really see actionable results. You can get somebody to help with your social media, SEO. A lot of big companies are doing this where they're outsourcing. So, I mean, you as an entrepreneur should definitely adopt that approach as well. I think it's really helpful to get things going. And then I would say definitely Meetup and Facebook. Like, if it's a business that you're passionate about, create a community around it in your community. Like, use Facebook, start a Facebook group. That is free,
so,
and it
meetups,
doesn't take...
Facebook groups, surrounding yourself
definitely.
With people that are on the path. I often tell people a lot of the times, right, is that if you have the job and you're trying to go from the 9 to 5, mm-hmm. if you can, make the transition into a job where your source of income is in the business realm or the industry of ultimately where you want to start your own business.
Right.
And if you can't leave your 9 to 5 job, maybe you can get an internship, or maybe you can volunteer some of your part-time
right.
to go there and learn the inner works of the business model in the industry so that the transition becomes easier. Essentially, getting paid for your education in the space. What
right.
are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that's definitely good, because a lot of the times in life, it's not about what you know, it's who you know. So I think if you take a position that's in the industry that you're trying to be in, everybody knows somebody. So, I mean, if you're in the space that you want to be in, you can make invaluable connections and really propel your business further than it would have been if you were just trying to do it independently. Another option that's available is that there are lots of flex jobs out there now. People have like Lyft, Uber, like there are tons of other things that are out there that give you more flexibility than a traditional job would. So, I mean, if you're trying to bridge the gap, I think there's even a website called flexjobs.com where you can make the transition to work from home and still earn an income once your business starts like gaining momentum and starts generating revenue, that you can kind of pick up some extra cash to pay the bills and keep the lights on.
What are your thoughts on allocating fundings? Because, you know, for aspiring entrepreneurs tuning in right now that are maybe paycheck to paycheck, barely mm-hmm. have enough money to, you know, survive, how can they ultimately save more funds? You know, I've heard the old saying, try to save 10% of your paycheck. What are some great tips you have for saving money that you can ultimately reinvest into your business?
I think get a financial planner. If you're serious about, and I know people think this is something for the uber wealthy, but there are companies out there like LearnVest that will connect you with somebody to kind of give you an overall. So if you are saying in the next year you want to start a business, talk to somebody. Their plans are really inexpensive. It's under $100, and they really help you.
$100 a month or
$100? Under $100 a month.
What?
No, it's way under $100. I think their cheapest okay. plan. I think they have a free plan, and there's one that's like $19, and the most expensive, like the deluxe one, might be like $99, but they have plans that are in between. But I think talk to somebody, or if you don't want to pay, go to like an entrepreneurship resource center and kind of be candid with them, or go to your bank and talk to them and say, you know, hey, let's have a financial planning session. This is what I make, this is what I have to spend, and this is where I'm trying to get to. Like, figure out what nest egg you need, and probably add an extra 6 months onto that, or at least an extra 3 months, because sometimes you don't kind of catch the market like you plan. So, you know, everybody thinks they're gonna start a product and it's gonna be wildly successful and it's gonna sell like a million, you know, in the first like 2 seconds or something. But for a lot of entrepreneurs, that's not the actual experience. So, I mean, whatever you're planning for, I would say give yourself a little extra cushion. And then sometimes things happen, like life happens and you have unexpected events.
What are your thoughts on crowdsourcing or crowdfunding for people who maybe have a product or an idea and they wanna mm-hmm. raise some money for it through crowdsourcing or crowdfunding?
Crowdfunding, I've spoken to a couple of people who've had varied experience in this space. It seems like it's a tough cookie to crack, because a lot of the, like, you'll see all these blog posts like, I just raised $20 million overnight on Kickstarter. I didn't do anything. I just put a campaign up. You know, for most people that I've spoke to who are like actual entrepreneurs in the trenches, that's not the experience that they've had. And then you also have to think about fulfilling the product and taxes, because I think a lot of people don't factor in the tax factor, and then advertising. So the people I know who personally had success on Kickstarter or like GoFundMe or one of those things, they've actually had to pump paid ads behind it, and then they allocated a big budget for that, and then they hired people to help them. So it's a cost incentive process. And then they were saying that by the time they fulfilled and then did taxes and the whole thing, it actually was not as lucrative. But on the plus side of it, though, it gave you an initial customer base, and it gave you like initial kind of orders to get going, and it also put your business out to a huge network of people that would not have ordinarily known about your business. So, I mean, if you're looking at it purely from a monetary perspective, it may not be as lucrative as you'd like it to be, but from a business growth and long-term scalability perspective, maybe a great option.
Thanks for some great tips, Stephanie. I'm Mark Lack, CEO of Shorten the Gap. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.